Hi, everybody, and thank you for joining us for the Preceptor Podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Ryan, and today we have with us a fourth-year student from Manchester University's College of Pharmacy, Amanda Junker. Amanda, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi. Yeah, my name's Amanda. I just finished an API rotation in the Drug Information Center at Manchester. So I've been reading a lot of articles this month, and I'm ready to talk about kind of an exciting one today. I am interested in pursuing a residency, a PGY1, kind of a general hospital residency, but I'd like to work in critical care pediatrics when I'm finished and working as a rural pharmacist.
And so Amanda is with us today to talk about an article that was recently published that looked at using opioids versus non-opioids for post-op pain. And as opposed to like a randomized controlled trial, this was a systematic review and meta-analysis. So just to start with, before we even get into this study specifically, Amanda, could you share with us how the fact that this is the systematic review and meta-analysis changes what we are going to be looking at with this study?
Yes, for just like a background information, a meta-analysis is really the compilation of multiple clinical trials, whether they're randomized control trials or observational. It's kind of a merging of all of those trials to see if we can come up with better evidence together rather than separately. And so instead of looking at what the methods are for each individual trial, what we really look for in a good meta-analysis is how they conducted their search. Were they very systematic and strategic about how they looked for articles? Did they check a lot of different databases and look for maybe articles that hadn't been published because their results weren't as good, so we can get a fuller picture of the disease state or medication we're looking at? We also look at the risk of bias for each study that's involved in the meta-analysis and kind of determine the quality of the evidence and how that quality of the study itself can lend evidence to an overview of the topic that the study's looking at. The reason that they do meta-analyses a lot of times are because they're looking at maybe rare disease states or special populations or something where it's an ethical concern or hard to get patients that are involved in the trial. So something like pain management is really hard to get patients signed up for trials because people want the best pain management they can get. And I think, you know, a lot of us would agree we don't necessarily want something or have a chance to get something that's not as effective. And so that's why they do this kind of meta-analysis for this topic today.
You know, that's a great point. I actually never would have thought of, you think a lot about pregnancy and the ethical concerns of signing people up for pregnancy trials and things. I never really thought about that in the realm of pain, but that makes a lot of sense.
This one's kind of a bigger meta-analysis that they haven't done before in pain management. A lot of times the ones that have been completed before this look at just the like one-off, like one dose of an opioid compared to one dose of, you know, an NSAID or something like that. And so this is giving a better picture of that pain management that's more applicable to the average patient.
Yeah, and I have to say, in seeing a previous journal club that you did, Amanda, this is something that you've had a bit of a focus on this month in terms of some alternative uses for pain. But I'd love to hear why you think this study in particular is an important one for us to review.
Well, I think if we think about it in terms of like what's going on in society, especially with the opioid epidemic, prescribers have a really difficult time balancing how they manage their patients' pain with that stigma of giving an opioid. And so a lot of times prescribers, some of them feel more comfortable just prescribing an opioid, and because it ensures that their patients' pain levels will be adequately controlled versus like something that they might be able to get over the counter. And then others are a lot more hesitant about prescribing opioids, and then they fear that their patients aren't satisfied with their care, or they may need additional care after, you know, a few days of being on something that's not an opioid. And so I think that the trial authors or the study authors were really looking to see if there was any evidence either way of what's effective for pain control, whether it's an opioid or something that's not quite as strong that doesn't have that stigma behind it. And then, like, how is that benefiting the patients?
Well, before we get much deeper in this article, Amanda, could you just tell us where this article is and the title so that if our listeners want to know, they can go in and find it?
Yeah, this was published in one of the June editions of The Lancet. And it is titled Opioid versus Opioid-Free Analgesia After Surgery Discharge, A Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis of Randomized Trials.
Perfect. And what did they find?
So their biggest finding, they looked at actually co-primary endpoints, so two different primary endpoints. They looked at the pain relief on a 0 to 10 centimeter scale, as well as the effect of vomiting as a side effect. And so for the pain relief, what they found was within 47 trials, there was a 0.01 centimeter difference between using a weaker opioid. A lot of them used something like tramadol or codeine. For the increased risk of vomiting, they found that almost 11% of patients who took opioids experienced vomiting during the 7-day course of treatment, versus only about 1% who did not take an opioid. There was a very negligible, an incredibly negligible difference in the pain relief and a lot of side effects that come with that.
And just to clarify that a bit further, Amanda, so when you say a difference, are you talking about between the non-opioid products and then those like codeine and tramadol, those weaker opioid products? Or is that between the weak opioid products and more potent opioids?
So that's between the weaker opioids and something like NSAID or acetaminophen.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, they did try to find trials that had this kind of study design that used those stronger opioids, and they weren't really finding a lot of those. And so they looked at more of that like tramadol side of pain relief. And so that is an important consideration when you're looking at this trial. But I do find the like prescribing habits to err towards the side of tramadol. That's still happening a lot today. So I do think these are still, you can still kind of apply this to the general patient.
And I think it's important to note, too, if we're looking at codeine as one of those other weaker opioids, we know from our pharmacogenomic background here, right, that people metabolize codeine in a lot of different ways. So some people might be slow metabolizers versus those rapid and ultra rapid metabolizers that it gets metabolized to morphine in the body. And so even though we're classifying codeine as maybe a weaker opioid, some people it still has a really potent effect, and we're still not seeing much of a difference. Now, I know this isn't going into pharmacogenomics, but I find that interesting in knowing the kinetics of codeine and its effect.
Yeah. And an interesting note is they find that sometimes with tramadol too, that patients can have varying degrees of pain relief relating to tramadol.
I smell another meta-analysis coming sometime soon. But that's
Nobody
great.
Likes
so
me.
What do you think, if you could have pharmacists take one thing away from this study, what's the bottom line? What should pharmacists know?
Well, for me, what I would take away is really there are a lot of side effects that come with opioids, even the weaker opioids. And if they're really not benefiting the patient and they're not causing, you know, a decrease in the satisfaction of the patient's pain, the pain scores, then I really feel like going with something like an NSAID or acetaminophen in patients where it's safe to take those medications really would be a better option than something that's a prescription pain relief.
I think now people are going to be more open to using those non-opioid drugs with the opioid epidemic. I know when I graduated from pharmacy school in 2008, we gave everybody opioids because we were so worried about pain. And then we all have seen what's happened with that. So I really think the biggest barrier we still need to overcome is for patients to believe that this is actually going to control their pain and that placebo effect. So I'm really excited about this. Well, Amanda, any last things that our listeners should know?
I highly recommend looking at meta-analyses. They're a very powerful tool in clinical trials and, you know, pharmacy research. And they can be a little bit intimidating at first, but I think once you kind of know what you're looking for, they can provide a lot of evidence where there may not have been that much in the first place.
I think that's a great point. And I've heard your preceptor for drug information, Dr. Rob Beckett, talk about meta-analyses and the appropriate use of them previously. And I think that's something we might be addressing in an upcoming preceptor podcast. But thank you so much, Amanda, for your time and sharing on this study. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you all for joining us for this episode of the Pharmacy Preceptor Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please like or subscribe. We would love your feedback on topics that interest you and how we can make this podcast better. Please submit your comments to help us develop content that best serves you. Thanks, everyone.